First challenge win. I'm singing live. I'm hitting huge notes. I'm impersonating Barbra Streisand. Check. Sang live on reality television, on national television. Won the challenge. Check. Walked the runway in some of the most stunning things I will ever put on my body. Check. Won the Rusical and did an entire Broadway performance with notable Hollywood director Adam Shankman. Check. And also got to eat cheese with Melissa McCarthy. Check.
Fierce. Fierce. Fierce.
I love this podcast.
Fierce. Fierce. Weather. Fierce. Food. Fierce. This weather.
Our tour begins here in this gallery, where you see paintings of some of our guests as they appeared in their corruptible, mortal state.
Hello, I'm Joey Nolfi, Entertainment Weekly's RuPaul's Drag Race reporter and foolish mortal, coming to you in spiritual celebration of the spooky goth design challenge live from the Haunted Mansion, where Safira Kristal is still on a break. And the ghost host has just informed us that the stretching room portraits will be replaced with the Drag Race Hall of Fame winner portraits.
Is this haunted room actually stretching? Or is it your imagination?
And I'm Jillian Cederholm, EW's news director. Like the Haunted Mansion and Oda Mae Brown, I'm also currently being occupied by 999 ghosts.
You're occupied by ghosts, Jillian? Do they even know you?
There's no windows and no doors in here.
wait, Jillian. Oh, wait, hold on. Wait, Madam Leota, who is currently sitting right next. I love that I'm showing this to our camera as if people can see this, because they can't. This is not a visual podcast, but my Madam Leota little statue that's sitting next to me has just revealed herself to me as a lip sync assassin. I am being contacted from beyond by a spirit who is the spirit's trying to break through. Jillian, can you feel this?
I do feel it. Oh no, wait, I think I'm just getting the mooing from Utica's dead cow Clara again.
Yes, add her to the attraction. But wait, I'm getting a message.
Wizards and witches, wherever you dwell, give us a hint by ringing a bell.
Oh. Oh wait, okay, it's just Plasma's ghost, our dearly departed queen, who we'll speak to later on in the episode. That's what the spirits are telling me right now.
You're gonna die!
Now that we have safely evacuated to the Haunted Mansion graveyard, where the season 16 promo did not take place under any circumstances with absolutely no gravestones, I do have a special surprise reveal from myself to Jillian Closet. Well, it's actually for both of us. This is actually for both of us. So after we both got immense pleasure out of Maya Amon LePage's iconic read with "You look like old ladies on TV that was exercising," I have reached out to said Maya Amon LePage for an explanation of what this read meant. So, to quote Miss Maya, LOL, laughing face emoji. Growing up, I used to see these old ladies on TV exercising. I'm going to send you a video. She sends this 15-minute sample workout video that is called 15-minute workout for older adults. So it's like the old sit and be fit things. I said, okay, thanks. I said, what about Plasma made you think of that? And she says, like how she moves very elderly like.
No.
Thank you to Maya Amon LePage for revealing that bit of information to me. I did tell her it was for the podcast, that I would read it on the podcast. So we're not exposing anything against her will. But that is, I am literally, can you see the tear coming out of my eye? I'm literally crying at how Plasma moves very elderly like. Does Jillian Closet not have a reaction to this?
That's the greatest. That's better than this whole episode, I think.
Well, Let's get into it. That was my gift to you, Jillian, and to our listeners who finally have clarity on what that meant. Okay, let's recap episode 9 of season 16, beginning with something that only makes sense in the realm of the supernatural. Plain Jane getting emotional and crying over Tsunami's exit and expressing genuine heartfelt sadness over her seashore, which segues into the mini challenge, the spit takes, with Rue entering the workroom and telling the queen something that's supposed to make them spit out a glass of water. As we make our way through reading RuPaul's memoir, which is out this week, I think that this challenge does feel very nostalgic, and it sort of harkens back to the kind of messy drag that Rue used to be known for doing all the time, like in these little skits and gags on stage that I always just think is so cute. Like that Rue is just this glamazon woman who is just sometimes so amused by the tiniest little gags like this. I think it's so amusing. Though Rue did get Saphira back after Saphira called Rue daddy on episode 1 by telling her Tsunami's test results show that you are the father, which then Saphira then did the spit take on. Nymphia also, I think technically in terms of report card, redeems herself for Snatch Game and wins the mini challenge shortly before Rue tells the queens that they will perform in yet another design challenge. See you next Wednesday, with the queens making neo-goth looks that, much to Nymphia's dismay, can't contain the color yellow. We also get a really hilarious moment of Saphira trying to tell the girls she's going to replicate Scarlett O'Hara's look, but forgets her name and asks the girls, who's that O'Hara girl? To which Dawn was very real for responding, Asia? So shout out to Asia O'Hara's butterflies in the supernatural realm of the beyond. They are trying to contact us right now. We can't let them in, though. Every single queen, though, says that they were gagged. Nymphia was not in the bottom two, with no mention of the runway, should have made her safe. This is another Jillian script edition that is, I got a surprise for Jillian. She has a surprise for me. Okay.
Wait, every single before queen, we get into it, I'm still caught up on the Maya thing. Can you read it one more time? What she said about plasma?
I said, what about plasma made you think that? And Maya said, like how she moves very elderly, like. Jillian just spit water all over her electronic equipment recording this podcast. Jillian.
All right. Jillian is the most
committed.
Here's a trick. So you know how you said I looked blurry to you on the video earlier? Is because my computer is covered in plastic wrap. That's why I moved my microphone away when I was laughing at the Maya thing in the first place. I'm going to take a quick photo.
I really am going to be the 1,000th happy haunt that joins the Haunted Mansion after this. You, it's dripping. It's literally dripping. Like Alyssa Farrah Griffin's face with milk on it. It is dripping. Oh, my gosh. Jillian is so... This might be the most committed I have ever seen someone be to a podcast that has no visual element. Is Jillian is literally sitting here with the full Haunted Mansion stretching room portraits behind her in full goth regalia, black wig, black lipstick, like lace, black lace on her shoulders. She covered her equipment in plastic and just did a spit water take. Like, okay, Jillian, typical EW's quick drag interview question. Had you initially planned to do that gag for a different part of this podcast and then you just adapted it for whenever I had the Maya reveal?
I have a table full of props behind my computer, which you don't see. It's like Carrot Top's workshop in here. So yeah, I'm always prepared.
Okay, that's our headline.
So let's get back to our recap.
Oh, God. Okay, so every single queen says that they were gagged, that Nymphia was, which you have spelled Nipmphia, N-Y-P-M-P-F-I-A, was not in the bottom two, with no mention of her runway that should have made her high safe per Joey's stance. Just noting that, Jillian, you also pointed out that one of Rue's spit take lines was, and the winner of Miss Congeniality is Plain Jane. So I think it's kind of clear that she knows Plain Jane is a bitch now. So Mama Ru is aware.
That was just interesting because we were thinking before, you know, the judges only see them on the runway. What are they actually told about them?
True.
So yeah, did you have any favorite spit takes here?
I think Maya, like, just because it's like that shot of her sipping the water is funnier, I think, than the actual spit take. I'm sorry, anything that Maya does at this point is just, it just tickles my soul. It is so funny. So I'm sorry that I had to say the word tickle to a goth right now, because I'm sitting across from a goth. You just look so displeased with everything that I'm saying.
I know, I'm trying to stay in character by just being very, and it's kind of ruining the vibe. Okay, let's move on. The things get heated out of the gate with Plain attempting to land some sabotage in the drag race workroom once again when she approaches Plasma to plant seeds of doubt, reminding her this isn't old school glamour goth and asking if this is outside of her comfort zone. Then Dawn tells Plasma now is a good time to diversify and come out of her shtick. Later, Plain and Plasma clash again after Q runs over to tell Plain that Plasma might be doing a similar look to her, which could lead to a repeat of them using the same fabric in the doll challenge a few weeks ago. Plain confronts Plasma about it, but refuses to reveal her own look. She's like, oh, I hear we're doing the same thing. And Plasma says, okay, show me what you're doing. And no, I won't show you.
Yeah.
So everyone seems to be trying to get in Plasma's head, and I don't really understand why they wouldn't do that to Q or Nymphia or someone who might stand a better chance. But I don't know. Like, did you feel that this was actual sabotage? It was kind of strange to me that Dawn later in a confessional did call Plasma's ultimate look cute and chic, which I don't know if we agree with. So what was this?
I think even to Rue later on the runway, it did read, because Rue even said, it's Dawn sabotage. I think, Plasma does talk about this, Plasma talks a lot about a lot of things in the interview coming up. She really talked a lot in this interview. She says that she doesn't think it was sabotage. Rue seemed to think it was sabotage. I am inclined to think that there was a little bit of sabotage element going on here. Maybe it wasn't overt sabotage, and maybe it was just like, I don't know. It is a competition. They're all in this for themselves. I think it would be crazy for Dawn to not try to sabotage Plasma if she already sensed some weakness going on, because as we have seen, Dawn is the evil elf of the season, which people like, it's so funny because Dawn keeps reading and like saying these little shady funny things the whole season, and she's like slowly becoming the slowly, I think she is like the right below Plain Jane is like the shadiest queen of the season, and it's really funny. So I think there might be some element of that in there, whether it's sabotage or just like trying to also get in Plasma's head, I'm not sure, but I think it does come off like that for certain, though Plasma says she does not feel that way. Jillian, do you want to read this next note that you have in the script?
Well, you had in the script that you wanted to mention Amanda's elimination again, so I was going to give you the floor.
No, I did not. I absolutely did not. I did not have that in the script this week.
Well, you wanted me to ask you. You wanted me to ask you, do we think the Plain drama is landing a bit softer in the workroom now that Amanda is gone?
Oh, okay. Yes, in that sense, yes, I did. But I do think there is a noticeable, at least in terms of presentation, like, do you agree? It feels like almost like the queens in the workroom are almost like accepting it more, or it's they're maybe getting used to it a little bit more. Does it seem like that to you?
Maybe a little, or maybe it's just the reactions are slightly different, or the way that the queen who is now being, whichever queen at the time is now being attacked by Plain, is not having quite the same reaction, just because I guess maybe it doesn't feel as personal or whatever it is. Like, Plasma just kind of brushed her off when she was saying her stuff to Plasma. And then I think we can maybe talk about it later, but in Untucked, they were all kind of giving it back to Plain, which is what I'd love to see. And if that was the dynamic that we were having the whole time, that'd be great. It was just that some of the girls that were coming under Plane's fire did not appreciate it. And it was just being said in a, I don't know, like the, some of the things she was saying to Amanda were definitely different than some of the things she was saying to Plasma in this episode.
Oh, for sure. And I think that it's like maybe becoming clear that Plane maybe does have a little bit more of a sensitive side because of her reaction to the read last week. Remember when she was like, oh, sister, that's too much. And It's just like, that was too much for you, Plane, after you have said all this shit about everybody. It, and I'm very excited too if we do get the chance to talk to Plane. Although it's seeming to me like, I mean, Plane said this episode that she is not planning to use her immunity potion. So It's like, we're getting her till at least for another 2 weeks. So whenever we do get the chance to talk to her, I am excited to bring up all of this. I'm like, why was that read the thing that pushed you over the edge when you were talking so much shit on everybody else? I am highly anticipating that interview whenever it happens. But I think the other thing to note here is, I know that you have some thoughts on this too. Like, do you think the perception among the fandom is shifting for Plain Jane?
I mean, I think a lot of the fandom was on board from the beginning. And I think that, I mean, a lot of people, when she came out swinging, said that this was a return to classic Drag Race. And our argument was, what about Mistress? And what about these other people that did it in more of a fun way? And now I guess I am thinking that, yes, like, she does actually remind me of a couple of people in classic Drag Race who I really was uncomfortable watching on the show and had big feelings about them. So maybe that is what they're taking from her, like these classic villain kind of characters, and are living for it. And I think others, I mean, we see the kind of hate that the fans are giving the queens online. And So just having a mouthpiece saying it for them on the show at times, I can see why they're living for that. And I think there's people that just do find the humor in it. I think I'm just a little more seeing it more of the sensitive side, especially knowing that some of the queens were so hurt by it.
Yeah. I think it's also, I don't like, it almost makes me wish that this was maybe more of a common thing, that people were accepting it in the same way whenever someone like Mistress or Candy or, you know, the other queens do this, because I think it's fun up to a certain point. Like I said, I was initially like on board with the Plain Jane stuff. Like, I did think it was somewhat amusing on episode one, but then when it started to get a little bit more pointed and seemed to come for no other reason other than to just be critical, that's when I started to be like, okay, this is a little weird. Like, episode one, I, it's good reality TV. Episodes 2, 3, 4, it started to be like, okay, this is getting weird. But as Plasma will say in our interview coming up, she is fully on board with the thought that Plain Jane came onto this show with that agenda to specifically do that. And she also cautioned people not to throw hate at Plain Jane for anything. She said that she loves her and she's her sister, and she was able to clock that this was something that Plain Jane came in wanting to do. So
we haven't had a villain winner in quite a while. So
that is true. Yeah. I mean, who would we say was maybe the last villain winner, including All Stars?
I would say probably Violet. She had her redemption like much later in the season, and I mean, but still had her fan base from the very beginning, living for her looks and what she was giving them, but I think did present more of the villain character
on
the show.
Only villain winner?
I've heard some mention season 2's winner.
Oh yeah.
As having a little bit of a villain arc edit, at least. We don't want to go
especially into toward the end. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But
it was almost the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah.
But RuPaul was, I mean, I guess the commonality is RuPaul was just such a fan of all these queens and what they were presenting, because she was really more focused on that than their personality, or, you know, at least their niceness, since that wasn't something that's coming off on the runway anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the legacy of what Plain Jane does, if this is going to give her career legs after the show, or if this is just going to be like a self-contained thing. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes, because I think that it's, as Plasma also says coming up, she's also unsure of where, you know, what doors does that open for you beyond just making good reality TV in a confined moment. So not sure. Well, it'll be interesting to see where this leads.
Well, that's something I've been thinking about watching other franchises and things too, about just what we're presented on this show and what, like, especially when RuPaul really seems to have a reaction to one thing about a queen, and then they try to make that their whole personality. Mm-hmm. And then I'm always thinking, like, okay, that's great, but is the objective to win the show, or is it to present to us for your career afterwards? That's the thing that I'm sure is challenging going in, because this is presenting to an audience your career, and it really could make you after the show. So it's, I'm sure, a really tough thing that you have to think of. And I think maybe Plain, I mean, yeah, I would love to hear more in her own words, her thought process on that going in, of playing that up and just maybe being one of those people who can brush off hearing comments, except that when she got that read from Nymphia, she couldn't. So I don't know. Like, if you're that thin skin, maybe that's too hard after the show. But yeah, I don't know. Like, what is the presenting, like, what is the point of presenting us something to get more TV time if suddenly afterwards people are going to hold it against you? I don't know.
Because it's also weird, because I think that her drag is actually, like, I think her drag is good. Like, I mean, she's clearly can sew. She looks beautiful every time she hits the runway. I don't know that she's necessarily had a bad look so far on the runway, or even something that comes close to being like, oh, that's not very good. She's clearly can act. She's clearly funny. She has an immense amount of skill. I mean, and we can see that marrying that with a more sort of shady, fun personality like Mistress, who I would also argue is, had a very good run on the runway, who was very good at a lot of the challenges, and red and was shady in like that fun kind of green room kind of way. And I just like the disconnect between why there are people that are just like, some people that are turning around, coming around on Plain, and then, you know, Mistress and people like Candy get, you know, dogged on for even years after their seasons. And then even people coming for like Lux, for Lux being excited and referencing things, you know, from her season. There are people like coming for her for that. And I'm just like, she's not even doing anything shady. Like, she's just talking about her time on the show, and people are like trying to demonize her for that. It's very weird.
Yeah, no, but I mean, unfortunately, we've called it out many times on this podcast and talked to the queens about it. The thing that usually they have in common is that they are queens of color who are getting
differently
from the fan base than a thin white queen like Plain. And that's just the reality of what we're seeing time and time again, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's move on. I mean, the other side of this coin has been Saphira this season, I think, who is very constructive with her criticism and packages it in a like very maternal and guiding way, as she did with Plasma, telling her that she was concerned for your insides and not hearing the joy of Plasma right now, when Plasma was getting worked up in the workroom, which she did also say, like, she's not hearing the joy of Plasma, which she said was actually really annoying, the joy of Plasma. So she also like mothers a little too close to the sun, I think, though, with Maya, when it appears that she essentially takes over Maya's construction process. And it seems like she does a shit ton of work on Maya's spooky dress. A lot of the other queens seem a little bitter over this, but a lot of them seem to turn it back on their own insecurities instead of actually having an issue with like a friend helping a friend. Like, none of them who took issue with this seem as secure in their own looks to not have to worry about a queen who has a proven track record of not being able to sew get some construction help from Mother Superior. So as long as the rules allow this kind of cross-contestant mingling, do you see an inherent issue with Saphira helping Maya like this?
I don't know. What was making me worried during watching it was that Saphira was going to run out of time and not get to her own outfit, which we've seen with Miss Scarlet slash Catherine slash Asia O'Hara in previous season. But I don't know. I guess, I mean, I have to acknowledge my bias that I also want Maya to stick around longer, which is what Safira said. I really like Maya and want her to stick around longer. And I agree. So I was trying to think, okay, if Plane was flopping and then Safira started helping her, would I feel differently? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I guess there is a, if the challenge is to make a dress and you're not able to and someone else is making it for you, then yes, there is some unfairness there. Although they both ended up arguing that Maya did a lot of the work, even though maybe we didn't see it.
We didn't see it, yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess that's on her to help her. But yeah, I guess if I'm another queen who is maybe struggling, I think I would have some problems with it.
Yeah. And I mean, like we said, they do have, or like Plasma says in this interview coming up, I think she said they had 16 hours to work on this stuff. So it's like, there's a lot of shit going on in between the 30 seconds that we saw of very quick footage of Safira actually doing work on Maya's gown. So there's a lot more that went into it.
Yes, although we do hear them say that they're up all night, and I think that they can do parts of this back in their hotel room, yeah. It seems. And yet Maya makes a comment about that she slept the second she got in the room. She fell asleep and had a great night's sleep. So I don't know. Like that was, I was like, Maya, I was really worried that it's just setting her up to get hate from fans calling her out for saying that she didn't deserve it, which I really don't want to see for Maya.
Yeah, I don't want to see it for Maya either. Yeah. She's just such a, that's what I love about Maya is that as opposed to, now, don't get me wrong. There are elements of Plain Jane that I enjoy, too. Like, do I enjoy, I guess, watching Plain Jane on television? Yes, there are elements of that that I do enjoy. But you can tell at all points that Plain Jane, like Plasma says, is sort of a construction. Maya, I don't think, is a construction. I think that Maya is purely being Maya. She's not trying to put on any sort of face for television. She is just Maya. In the face of RuPaul being like, girl, where is your spark? Where is your energy? Maya is not going to give you any energy because Maya, that's Maya in that moment. Like Maya's going to come out when Maya's going to come out. And that is, yeah, as we'll see later.
She saves her energy for later.
Yes. So that's what I love about Maya is that she is Maya through and through.
But I do really continue to love the narrative of Safira being the mother bear for everyone in this competition. I think mm-hmm. that's just really sweet to see. I do love that. But there was one thing that I don't know. Please tell me if you noticed this. But when Safira goes over to comfort Plasma, then like they hug each other and then they look up. And I noticed that Safira's mouth is like covered in red stain. Like it looked like someone, like a kid drinking a pitcher of Kool-Aid and having like a stained red mouth. And then Plasma's right eyebrow also has like a bunch, like a red smudge on it. And I was like, I kept rewinding to be like, Safira, kiss her on the eyebrow and like leave this red stain. I was like transfixed by this. And then I realized and rewatched the episode to confirm that it's because they're still in their quick drag and they both had such, and Plasma had one red eye and one some other colored eye for like a clown look. And that's where the red came from. So just in case any other fans, or I'm sure so many of you listeners were wondering where the red came from, I just wanted to solve that for you.
Great. Another Jilly investigation.
Yes. Now let's get to the runway. Our third design challenge in only 7 episodes since the full cast combined, which
I'm not
is
mad
a
about.
Lot. And well, I don't know. I am not sure I am ready for Drag Race to turn into Project Runway. We got some incredible designs from the usual suspects, but others fell super flat as Plain Jane Cher wig, and they all end up getting critiqued. But let's break down the best and the worst from the runway, starting with Plasma. Does this look put Plasma in the running for the Golden Blute? Blute. God.
Golden Blute.
The Golden Boot, or does Amanda still have that in the bag?
I think currently the Golden Boot is between, because it seems like they're more giving the Golden Book for singular looks versus Golden like an entire runway package. So I think this and Maya's doll design challenge are going to win the Golden Boot at this point, unless we see something absolutely more spectacularly awful for that, or Hershey's pants. Oof.
Well, Hershey just didn't make the pants. And then, I mean, we also have Plasma's Tweedledee and Tweedledum, which an interesting concept, but didn't quite execute. Right. But I think, I mean, I know that Selena Estides has really leaned into it now, but we remember that she was not super thrilled about getting the Golden Boot on a look that she brought into the show and a design that she was really proud of at the time and got read for, versus someone like Lala, who just knew this was a look that she put together herself. It was falling apart. It was a design challenge. And so I think that is a little more fun to not have wasted a bunch of money on something that's now getting a Golden Boot. So that makes me think that maybe they won't give it to Amanda for that Ness look. But it just, if we're combining like how far off of a theme something goes and nonsensical, then I still do give that to Amanda. But this Plasma look, yeah. I told you already that I was fully prepared for you to love this Plasma look.
Oh, no. I do not. No, I do not. I don't like it. Plasma does not like it. Plasma said in our interview that she is proud of it for being different from what Plasma does, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, her choker was very goth. I'll give her that.
Oh, I liked the choker.
Then she had a random like pageant queen kind of necklace on under it that didn't make sense.
The choker was nice with the lace. I liked the lace choker. And I think in the pants, I mean, constructing those pants, I mean, I will give her props for that. Because, I mean, as we saw some other queens, the iconic Hershey sometimes just take pants off the rack.
The issue is that they just kind of read as jeans.
Right.
And kind of bell-bottomy jeans, and then with those platform shoes.
If you look up close, the pants actually do have like an interesting material on them. Like I paused and I was looking up close, like they do, but it doesn't necessarily read on TV. Yeah. So
that's actually my biggest issue with the runway. Just as somebody who, when I hear the theme, I get very excited. That's an aesthetic that I love to see. And even when I saw the pile of material, I just couldn't wait. But the issue is black fabric like that, especially when it's like some kind of intricate pattern, but just black on black, it's just not going to read on TV. And so I think even within the ones that I really loved as being like super goth and super black, it was very hard to see the detailing on someone like Nymphia or Dawn. Like you really had to pause and look. And I would love to see like a still photograph of them with like really appropriate lighting on them to really see the look for all it was. And then I think other people leaned into putting other, like, especially like white. There was just way too much white on this runway. It was like, you know, this time I visited a fair in Connecticut, just way too much white. And so this material, so to me, like Q, like it's an incredible design, but it was just like not quite the goth aesthetic that I want. And even if the lining inside had been darker or even like a purple and black, other than like so much white on the outside and then so much white on the inside, it just read to me a little bit more like a steampunk. And these are all related subgenres anyway. And it's not to say that only black, huh?
She's gonna block you.
Oh no, Q. Yes. I will never tweet that she will block me. But Q's, I mean, no, it was just, it was so beautiful. And I just kept thinking, like, okay, what if like just like a little bit less white and a little more of something else there, I guess. I don't know. Or this had like a slightly different theme.
Mm-mm. Jillian, what? That look is one of the most exquisite things to ever come down out of a design challenge. Come on. That just, and Nymphia's look.
Incredible, but I just wish it was a different theme. And then Nymphia's, my issue is also just not being able to see all the detailing exactly on it and not being able to see her face, although her makeup I don't think was quite as gothed out as I would like it either.
Yeah, the makeup, and this also does beg an interesting comparison to something like Dragula, where I think I don't know, like the elevation of the kind of quote unquote gothy looks that you see on something like Dragula is just so far and above beyond what we see on Drag Race. So yeah. It's, you know, knowing what is out there in terms of goth. And now granted, these queens made all of these looks in the workroom. And I think if you're looking at like, it's just the interesting dichotomy between the two and what is true goth and what is like, you know, high glamour goth. And I think that that's what something like what Q was going for is a glamour interpretation of goth, because this is not Dragula. This is RuPaul's Drag Race. They're not going to come out doing like a crazy Dragula interpretation of goth. So I think Q's look was perfect. And I think Nymphia's look was absolutely perfect. The other ones that like, I mean, Plasma is unfortunately at the bottom for me. Maya's, there was something wrong, like the wig was wrong for it. I think if she maybe done a different, like a Marge Simpson black wig with that, it would have looked a little better. And I do think, I know you have a note here about Rue's critique for Maya, but I do think a different neckline would have worked better and made a world of difference with this dress. If she had like a Marge Simpson black wig, like a Bride of Frankenstein wig, and then like a V neckline, I think it would have changed the game for Maya.
Yeah, I think so. But I don't know. Okay, I'm controversial statement. I think Saphira made one goth gown, and I think that was Maya's and not hers.
Yeah, Saphira's didn't necessarily read as goth to me either.
Yeah, I think Maya just didn't maybe sell it in a certain way. But when she walked out, I mean, I don't know, like I'm going to disagree with like latex, black latex is super goth. And then the back black lace sheer is also. And so maybe it didn't go super well together when it was like half and half, but she did have like the spider details I thought was really cute.
Yeah.
The blinged black skull on her wrist I thought was really cute. I think Maya just, this is not her aesthetic, and maybe she didn't sell it as well as she could have. And then, yeah, I agree with the neckline and all of that. My note about Rue is just that, like, I keep cracking up and feeling like kind of bad afterwards, but I don't think Maya is taking it as being red, but Rue just keeps saying these things to Maya that is like a fair critique, but it just comes off so funny to me where she said, "You want to play with your proportions because you are diminutive." Like, she just keeps like saying these things and closing that neck up, never really a good idea for someone who is your size. It's just like, I don't know. It's just like cracking me up, but I don't think
I love when Rue says stuff like that.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to say was just like it, the only thing about Kaia Gerber that I appreciated was that when Plasma, I mean, she was fine. It was just one of those things where even when she's in Untucked, she's kind of saying the same things that every single guest judge says, and it's great. But at this point, yes, we all agree that these queens are doing so many different kind of skills, like that's kind of the whole point of the show. But the one thing that I got a chuckle from was her line when Plasma was walking the stage was, what did she say? "You ain't nothing but a hound's tooth." And it just like was kind of funny because she has dated now two Elvis actors, so it was like she was begging to have a celebrity magazine write that up for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, the judges understandably read Plasma and placed her in the bottom with our dear Maya once again. And in fitting fashion, they tied the lip sync to Wednesday Addams and had the queens perform to Bloody Mary, the TikTok remix, a religious song about Jesus by Lady Gaga. A performer who took heavy inspiration from Yelena Carluza's career. Thank you for those additive notes, Jillian Closet. And as Plasma will tell us later, we can all agree the judges were called in by the authorities for questioning because they all witnessed an absolute murder. Even though Plasma had two challenge wins and Maya has zero and has been in the bottom three times now, her skills were that good that she stayed over Plasma and she put on a hell of a show. I could not take my eyes off of when like you can see a queen getting murdered, you are still sometimes watching the murdered queen and being like, "Oh God, oh baby, honey." But like, I could not take my eyes off of Maya. She was just the star of this, to me, in many ways, like almost the star of this entire episode, just because she was so funny in the beginning of the episode. She was so, like, I mean, she just, I love Maya so much. And this lip sync is just like, I don't want to be rooting for her to be in the bottom, but I'm like, if this is what we get every time, it's like, she might be one of the best lip sync performers that the show has ever seen.
Yeah. I think she really cemented herself as a lip sync assassin. And I was worried. I think coupled by like worried about will fans send her hate for not making her own look? Are fans going to start trying to hate on her for leaning on this kind of lip sync performance? But to me, it's like Evie Oddly. I will never, ever get tired of watching her back bend and do all of her gymnastic-y moves. I will not get tired of seeing Maya flip. And I watched this over and over because I was like, oh, let me watch it again and only watch Plasma this time to see what's going on. And I couldn't. Every single time my eyes were on Maya and giving us this show. And it was like when she does those two backflips so quickly and is still like lands and is perfect. Just like still like spot like face to camera. It's so perfect.
Yeah.
The Sasha Velour black rose petal moment was so funny. Like she does it so early in the song, but then I understand like you don't want to flip and have that just fall off in the wig. But we do see in Untucked that when everybody else goes to listen to the song, including everyone telling Plain, hey, you should go listen to this song, you're probably in the bottom. And then they look over at Maya and say, are you going to go prepare? And she's like, oh, no, I know the song. So she doesn't go and listen to the song again. Yeah. But that also means, like, we also don't see her get up and go do anything. So did she have the rose petals under her wig the entire time she was walking the runway? I just think is really funny.
Maybe. That will be if, you know, because I think we're kind of... I hate to project this early, but it's like, I think we are building to like, I don't think that Maya's going to make it all the way. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I don't think someone can keep bottoming and keep lip sync assassinating their way to a finale, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy seeing it.
Well, Cameron Michaels did it.
That's true.
Yeah. Cameron Michaels is the only one I think who's done it. But I hope for Maya is just to me, like I said, I think Maya should have won RDR Live. That I think Maya should have that talent.
I agree.
And so I think Maya should. Well, wait, was Maya in the girl group that won?
Yeah, she was.
Okay, so I think Maya should.
So she has that, but everyone has discredited that even though everybody always counts that as a full Nymphia has two wins, whenever they would refer to Megami or Geneva or Maya's like win from that, win. Like, one-fourth a win, which, I just take issue with because they were all contributing to that.
I do too. Yeah. Okay. So another thing that I have noticed that Jillian and somehow interpreted in these notes that meant that I have seen the next episode, which I have not. But I was just noticing that at the beginning of this episode and past episodes where she is coming off lip syncing, she's actually like coming out of her shell a little bit, and she's like a little bit spicier. Like she was pulling on Morphine's wig, and she was like sitting on the couch 2 weeks ago being like, you're lying. Like, oh no, I didn't say that. Like it's almost like lip syncing like energizes her and like gets her like riled up, and she like comes back into the workroom the next day and she's like ready to go, and she's like Maya's coming out of her shell. So I think it'll be interesting to see at the top of next week's episode what her energy is like in the workroom.
She's in her comfort zone. You mentioned before that she had said that she was drunk, so maybe same. I'm much more personable and funny and biting when I'm in that same state.
Just don't do a spit take the next time you drink, Jillian, and you'll never have anything to worry about. Oh. All right. Grab your tap shoes and insurrection tactical gear, because we are storming the house down boots with an exit interview with alleged insurrectionist and BFA weaponizer Plasma coming right up. Welcome back to EW's Quick Drag Podcast, where today I'm proud to be doing a little field correspondence on political ground as my next guest, who was famously unaccounted for on January 6th, seemingly plots another insurrection, maybe on the Drag Race studios after her untimely exit from RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm kidding, of course, but in the vein of my next guest, who is as a BFA weaponizing as they come and a true funny girl at heart, and the only thing she's storming is a tap dance number on the global stage. Please welcome the fabulous Plasma, how are you?
Girl, you're lucky I'm in Indianapolis doing this interview because I would have stormed your office. It's such a joy speaking with you. And I just, I just told you, you know, just to let y'all know, I'm the same person when the cameras stop rolling and when the microphone turns off. But I just told Joey this is already the highlight of my day. So I'm just thrilled to be here.
Oh, Plasma, that means a lot. And I just, I'm sorry that it's under these circumstances. I think a lot of people are going to be very surprised by this elimination, but I do like important matters out of the way first. Like, really, where were you on January 6th? We have to know.
Well, you know, I'm glad that I'm given the opportunity. As a strong Nancy Reagan impersonator, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to clear the air. I know, of course, in full seriousness, I have never, ever voted for the Republican Party, although some of my family members have run on a Republican platform before. I was at home in Texas watching in horror and shock and dismay, just like, you know, the rest of us were, as our democracy came crumbling to the ground. Isn't that fun?
I love that you took that question seriously, Plasma.
Well, okay, because people on Twitter are legitimately curious now, thanks to Tsunami News and her fucking antics. They're wondering where I was on January 6th. And I'm like, girl, I was getting drunk in Texas with my parents because we were watching our entire world as we knew it come crumbling to the ground.
Yeah.
So like, I have to take that question very seriously or else people are going to keep asking me.
Well, I mean, you did bring up, you know, your family. And that was something that I think was surprising to me. Cause I remember meeting your dad and your sister at the event in New York. And that was really, really fun at the premiere event. But I mean, how has being on the show impacted that area of your life with your other family members, like the ones that you're talking about that ran on a sort of Republican platform? Has that impacted your relationships in any significant way?
Significant only in the sense that my relationships with my family have never, ever been stronger or more empowered. And
good.
And I sincerely, you know, coming up in Texas, I bore witness to a lot of stereotypical behavior in a rural northeastern part of the state that on the outside looks very, very scary. And on the inside is also very, very scary, typically. Yeah. However, like, you know, a lot of my family members did not vote in favor of what I consider people who will advocate on behalf of the queer community. And yet, every single time I post something or every single time I have another moment on the show or on Instagram, my family are the first people to respond, extended, close, immediate, and otherwise, chosen and otherwise. Like it's truly been remarkable. And, and you know, now because of the January 6th comment, which I have to give my flowers to Tsunami Muse, brilliant read, especially knowing my family.
Yeah.
You know, I did grow up in a family that ran on Republican tickets for political offices in the state of Texas. And I also remember coming out to these people when I was a young person and having the most robust, incredible, empathetic response from people in my family that I never saw it coming from.
Yeah. Well, I wish that, you know, this is a whole Oprah interview in itself that I would love to spend a half an hour talking to you about. But before we get into this week, I think we should start with our developing story after the SAG Awards when we got Chris Perfetti to comment on fans' comparisons to you, because you did lobby at Roscoe's to have a role on Abbott Elementary. So is there any development on that? And what would you say to Quinta seriously about like why you should be cast on this show?
Well, there's no current development. However, Quinta, if you're listening, first of all, big fan, huge. I was brought up watching documentary style comedy, and it is something that is so nuanced and so specific and so wonderful. And I'm a huge fan and a huge admirer, and I have so much respect for what you do. And I'm lucky enough to look exactly like your co-star, Chris Perfetti. So I really just think that I'm going to push my luck here and say that maybe there's a drag queen story hour that makes its way to Abbott Elementary. that I would love to be a part of. And I'm not trying to push a political agenda. I'm literally just trying to offer you an idea. Take it or leave it. I'm here to support you, and congratulations on all your success. How about
that? Yes. That is great. No, we will put that out into the universe and hope that it happens.
Yeah. But also I have this strange plot line already like cooking. It's not my job to write the show. But I mean, hello, I'm an overachiever. It's like, yes. I'm Christopher Fetty. I'm Jacob's younger brother. We haven't spoken in a couple of years. I show up for Drag Queen Story Hour. He doesn't recognize me. I come to school as a visitor out of drag the next day. And he's like, what the hell are you doing here? I never want to see you again. And I was like, bitch, I was here yesterday.
You have gone through this whole scenario. You have, Quinta, Plasma has literally laid it all out for you. Like, this is, you have to do zero work except pick up the phone and call Plasma. So, like,
girl,
I mean... Here we go.
RuPaul, and I'm manifesting another Emmy win for RuPaul on my shoulders. Why not another one for you? How about that?
There we go. There we go. Well, we do have to, let's move on to this week. I mean, unfortunately, the reason we are talking, your unfortunate elimination. How do you feel about this elimination happening after two challenge wins? Like, does it feel justified?
You know, first of all, I will say this. I totally, completely disassociated during that lip sync. Let's talk about
it. Oh, yeah.
I you know, and I'm a performer. I do my best work when I'm on stage in front of people. I do. That's just, I've always been that way. And I remember getting up on that stage. Well, actually, I remember walking that runway and knowing, okay, well, I'm glad that I learned the song. Because, you know, in a cast full of FIT fashion majors, I got my BFA in musical theater and enjoyed visiting the costume shop for a fitting. So I've never been the person who could sew my way out of a situation. I never have been. I don't think I ever will be. I also like to say that I have a lot of very talented friends who are much more equipped at sewing than I am. And I can sew, but when you're given 16 hours to create something that will live in infamy forever on reality TV, the pressure is on and your fingers start to shake at the machine, in my case anyway. So I'm still very incredibly proud of what I made. I thought it was different for me. It was very much a departure from typical Plasma, but I am someone that appreciates a departure here and there, because like, I think if you're one thing, if you exist on one plane, if you exist in one medium, I think your art is headed for the trash, honestly. Yeah. And that's harsh, but like, I think if you do one thing, if you're a one trick pony, that is fabulous. And I hope you ride that pony to the bank. However, I'm not the kind of artist who's going to try one thing and do one thing successfully forever. That's not who I am. And so I'm still very proud of what I made. I don't think Dawn sabotaged me. I think she was legitimately offering me another opportunity to show versatility, and I took it. And I have no regrets. And also, the first thing Sophia Cristal said to me when we touched base after filming was over was, Plasma, I love you, baby, but Maya ate your ass up in that lip sync. And honestly, I dissociated, so I feel like I wasn't even there to see. But I have no doubt. All I remember is that the shoes came off, the wig came off, and the birds on her shoulders came off. And I was like, okay, yeah. I'm going home.
Well, you did. Okay, so you already answered my question about, see, you really do have this all produced. You answered my question about Dawn already. But so, okay, but I want to go back to the Safira moment, because I try to remain objective in this and like seeing how the fans might react, but it's
you're trying to be objective. When did that start?
But like interview over. Do you, given what Safira said, like, I mean, are you prepared for like when people say that, like, you got murdered in this lip sync? Like, do you think that's an accurate assessment?
Yes. Oh my God, yeah.
Aww.
But like, the thing is, Joey, I genuinely left nothing on the table. I left nothing unexplored. I mean, episode one, I came out lip syncing to myself singing. I got accused of not trusting myself and my instrument. First challenge win, I'm singing live. I'm hitting huge notes. I'm impersonating Barbara Streisand. Check. Sang live on reality television, on national television. Won the challenge. Check. Walked the runway in some of the most stunning things I will ever put on my body. Check. Won the Rusical and did an entire Broadway performance with notable Hollywood director Adam Shankman. Check.
Check.
And also got to eat cheese with Melissa McCarthy. Check.
Check.
Like, and then, you know, choreographed. I'm not a choreographer, but I choreographed 98% of that girl group's challenge. And you can ask anyone in the Courage to Love group, in the Love of Girls, We did get some help off camera from Miguel Zarape, who was incredibly helpful and just like helped polish and clean, but he was very complimentary of my work.
Check.
Just like, I checked so many boxes. I left nothing on the table unexplored. And to go home, you know, being compared to the theater queens who walked so I could run in my LaDuca heels, Alexis Michelle, Jan Sport, Lucy LaDuca, to walk away in the same position as Jan with two main challenge wins, it's like unheard of.
As much as I admire your work on the show, I really admire your revisionist history here and saying that Jan had two challenge wins on season 12 because she had zero.
Well, yes. Girl, and I love Jan. Jan, if you're listening to this, I absolutely adore you. And thank you again for letting me borrow your Gaga costume for that Vogue shoot. But it is not lost on me that it took Jan two seasons of Drag Race to win one challenge. It took me one season of Drag Race to win two.
Two. Yes. There we go.
So Jan walked so I could run, bitch.
Yes, she did. I have loved all those memes that is like the you know, evolution history of all the BFA queens on the show. But well, speaking of BFA, okay. For Snatch Game, I did want to talk to you about this too. I'm obviously Patti LuPone, theater icon. Even someone who is not a theater fan such as me knows this is a theater icon. There was something curious, though, that I noticed. I know that you love Miss Patti and you love your theater, but, like, Maya was on her phone for a lot of the challenge. Like, why in the spirit of Miss Patti did you not take the opportunity to snatch the phone from her hand?
Well, Joey, you know, the edit is not in my control. And I will also say, as someone who...
Wait, listen. So you did snatch it out of her hand?
Well, so the thing is, first of all, she wasn't sitting next to me. So let's talk about it. And I was not about to get up and walk around the desk and take someone else's prop because as in the spirit of Patti LuPone as a theater professional, you never touch another actor's props. Hello. So
romper room fuckery. Yes, as Latrice would say.
Well, exactly. And also, I felt very empowered in the knowledge that starting fights on the Snatch Game is not something that lands you in a position to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not about to pick a fight. And also, bitch, to be quite frank, we were just coming off the Rusical and I was fucking tired. So I wasn't going to pick a fight. I was like looking at my notes, doing my Patti shtick. I had props ready in my purse to talk about all the things I had stolen from my various Broadway credits. I had a pair of cheeseburger sunglasses that Plain Jane loaned me. And I was going to pull them out of my wallet and say, I stole these from an off-Broadway flop called Burger Finger, the musical.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, you know what? I'm nervous. The Snatch Game is a very quiet experience when you're filming it. And I was like, you know what? Rest on your laurels. You know Patti inside and out. And as Dawn and Q pointed out in Untucked, my impression was spot on. My jokes just weren't landing. But you know what?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, the moment I knew I was safe was when Morphine tried to come for my ass. And I said, I'll drink to that. And RuPaul
yes, that was funny.
Shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, you
that
know,
that was really good.
I was like, in this moment, I have secured my safety. And this is my life raft. And I will ride it home. That's it.
So if you were seated directly next to Maya, you would have maybe taken the phone.
Well, perhaps, but maybe we'll find out on All Stars.
Okay.
No.
Well, let's say this. So this week, let's get to the design challenge, because I mean, it is, like you said, Tim Gunn's Drag Race. That really cracked me up. But I mean, things got a little hairy, or arm hairy, I should say, when Plane came over to you to try to get in your head. It looked like at the beginning of the challenge. And then there was like this whole thing with Q, where Q said that Plane was, or that you were doing a similar look to Plane. Like, it looked like you were very plucked by this occurrence of Plane like walking over to you. So how long or how heated did that sort of clash get in the workroom? Like, did it blow up beyond that?
Well, first of all, anytime Plain Jane approaches me, the arm hair stands straight up on my body. So let's talk about it. And then you know, can I be shady? Can I be shady for just a second?
You can, Plasma.
And he said, thank you for your permission. Anytime Plain Jane accuses me of stealing an idea from hers, which I believe the times have been few, I'm the spectrum on which we look at creativity in this cast. It's something that is not lost on me when we consider Plain Jane and the creativity, or maybe I should say the lack of creativity in the package that we're seeing. I should also say That plain Jane accusing me of stealing an idea from her is rich, because that is literally the last person I would steal an idea from.
Ooh.
So, and if we look at the looks that made their way on the runway, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I am proud of what I made. Dawn, in my opinion, was not trying to come for me. She was trying to encourage my versatility coming through. Yeah. And she is one of my sisters and I love Dawn. And also I should say, Plain Jane and I are sisters and I do love that girl and I have respect for that girl. So I'm just throwing some lighthearted shade, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you did take the share wig from her. So you did take something.
Well, you know, I wore it and then I threw it back in her workstation when I went back in the workroom to pack. And I was like, you know what? Good luck washing this. There's filth in this now. But when we're looking at the bodysuits, I made a leotard that was a high-waisted leotard with a low-cut pants. I've never made any such thing in my entire life. Never in my life. Plain Jane made, let's look at it, she made a leotard with shoulder pads for the doll design challenge. She made a very cut out leotard swimsuit, denim sort of something, she cut up a jacket for the ball. And then in this goth challenge, correct me if I'm wrong, but she made a leotard with buckles.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? You stick to your bodysuit guns, girl, and you go for it and you go for gold. And if we're going to talk about stealing ideas, at least I did something a little bit more conceptually creative than a third leotard in a row for a design challenge. And I will stand by that.
Uh-huh. And you also did make pants, unlike our dearly departed Hershey, who just stole the pants. So I do like that you made the pants as well, even though it, you know, Hershey did give us that iconic moment earlier in the season. So you can say that as well.
Yes, of course. Oh my God. And Hershey LaCourgette is an icon who will live forever.
Oh, yes. Oh, I love her. Oh, she's amazing. But did that, it also seemed to me like at the start of this season that the drama with Plain really seemed to, I mean, it blew up everywhere in the fandom. It seemed like among the other queens, specifically with Amanda. But did the drama with Plain and everyone else in the room while you were filming, did it sort of get better as the season progressed? Like, because it seems almost to me like, well, I was going to say, it seems like it's coming off as if like maybe people were getting used to her antics, but so it didn't get better.
I think there's something to be said about a film production schedule not allowing time for mental health rest and recuperation. And I think that the farther along we got, the less and less patience and capacity, personally, I can't speak for anyone else, but personally, the less patience or capacity I had for Plain and her antics. I will also say, in defense of Plain Jane, she walked in with an agenda and she very clearly and very intentionally executed that agenda. And for that, I think she should be very proud. And I think she should stick to exactly what she wanted to do. And I think that she's doing a phenomenal job making reality television. That's not what my goal was. My goal was to audition for Broadway shows with this opportunity. And to, you know, as Julie Andrews famously once said, when the Lord closes the door, somewhere he opens a window. And RuPaul's Drag Race third design challenge closed the door to me and opened a window, hopefully, into performing and Broadway and having a career with longevity in performance and entertainment. I don't know necessarily if being a shady cunt on reality television opens that many windows for Plain Jane in the future, but that's not something that I am going to worry about. And so I just want to say, if anyone is trying to come for Plain Jane on the internet, if anyone is trying to come after her for being a shady lady, that is who she is, and that is what she wanted to do on the show, and she's doing a damn good job of it. So I'm choosing to celebrate her intentionality and her tenacity in that pursuit, genuinely. And I wish literally nothing but the absolute best for her, and I think that she's a true talent and the world's next bodysuit atelier.
Well, I just have, we're running short on time here, so I just have two more quick questions for you. I know that you said, okay, so even though RuPaul said on the runway that it was Dawn's sabotage, you don't think it was sabotage. But, I mean, we can see before Dawn said that to you that you were, it looks like you were working on something different on the mannequin. Like, it almost looked like an upside down, like, black triangle or something that was on the mannequin. So what was the original look going to be before you course corrected to what you put down the runway?
Yeah, it was supposed to be sort of like this. I was inspired by the legend Miss Patti LuPone and her upcoming appearance in what's it called? Agatha, Coven of Darkness or something.
The show.
The WandaVision spinoff. And I was going to do sort of this, like, this Antichrist sort of witchy, like, Morticia Adams, like, very sleek, very black, very decadent, like, witch pentagram Antichrist situation. Which, of course, would have been another departure for Plasma, who walked out in this giant yellow Mrs. Butterworth-inspired dress, like, 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, gothic is not really my thing. However, I've got to plug my next project, but I am doing a Bloody Mary Lady Gaga tribute video to an original remix of Bloody Mary, because fuck the TikTok version. and I'm dropping it in conjunction with the episode, and it is an effort to reclaim the song, reclaim my interpretation of goth.
What did you do with the look that you made? Where is it now?
It is currently in scraps and shreds after the drag queens that I hired for this music video project were asked to rip it apart on camera off of my body. I hired an ensemble of drag queens, which, let me plug them really quickly. It's Daniela Darling, Kiki Ball Change, Julie J, Salmonella, my drag mother.
Julie J.
Black Cherry. Yeah. We have a lot of cameos from the Don't Mind My Parade video too. We have Salmonella, Black Cherry, my dear friend, Lady Celestina, and Pink Pancake. So I have seven girls, which is ironically how many girls are continuing on in the competition ahead of me.
Yeah.
This whole video has been very, very, like, intentional and very intellectual for me. It's been lovely.
Yeah.
In the same day, we turned around and shot this demonic possession scene at the McKittrick Hotel. And I just asked my director, Michael McCrary, and my videographer, Jake Primmerman, to follow me around in, like, this 1970s documentary style, night vision, hunt for Bigfoot style cinematic universe, where I am totally depraved in the look that sent me home on the show, crawling on the ground, Gollum in the cave style, trying to escape the mental trappings of being remembered for something that I completely tanked and failed in. I'm really proud of this video, if you can't tell. I'm really, really proud of it. It's a 180 from the Barbra Streisand project. It's totally different. It's really, like, more of my creative left brain intentionality, poetic side.
It sounds amazing. I can't wait to see it either. And I can't wait to see what else you do after the show, Plasma. You've just been such a pleasure to watch and to interview. And it's just such a delight always when, you know, you're in the orbit. So thank you again for everything, and congratulations to you. And can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you, Joey. And you tell Chris Perfetti and Quinta Brunson that I'm serious.
We're going to put this out into the article. Don't you worry.
Thank you so much, babe. You are a joy and a light, and every opportunity I have to talk with you is magic, and I can't wait to see you back home in New York.
Likewise, Plasma. Thank you so much. Thank you again to Plasma for descending from the Drag Race afterlife to visit us here in our Drag Race seance. And please, if you enjoyed the tea she spilled, rate and subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. If it's a 10-star scale, then don't give us a 5-star review. Give us a 10-star review, because it really does help us out in bringing you even more exclusive chats with the cast.
Please make sure to tune in next week. We'll have another interview with season 16's next eliminated queen. Until then,
have a spooky, kooky, and creepy night. Quick Drag is an Entertainment Weekly podcast hosted and produced by Joey Nolfi and Jillian Cederholm, produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Thanks for listening.
This weather, cloudy weather. Ooh!
Boo.